the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, where it is Freddy Peralta's world and we are just living in it. The 21-year-old struck out 13 batters. It's the most in franchise history for a major league debut. He was kind of a surprise pick or just a surprise starter on Sunday when the Brewers needed somebody on short notice with Chase Anderson getting sick. And what a story. His parents had never seen him pitch. They came to see him pitch at Colorado Springs in AAA and then found out they had to wait a day because he was getting the call to the big leagues for his major league debut. What a crazy story. Hopefully, I mean, by now you know the whole thing. You've read it. You've seen it. You saw Sophia Minert's phenomenal sideline interview with the family on site. Just a great day of baseball. The Brewers won the game. The kid pitched a no-hitter into the sixth inning with one out in the sixth, where we thought we were going to see some pretty crazy history there as well. But alas, we'll have to settle for just a win. Brewers win 3 out of 4 in Colorado. They're back on an upswing heading into the next leg of this road trip in Arizona and Minnesota. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am the host of the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Got a couple things for you coming up today. We've got Todd Rosiak. He's one of the Brewers beat writers at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about a number of topics, including, of course, Freddy Peralta, but also Travis Shaw, who's having a phenomenal start to the year as kind of one of the linchpins of the offense. The number of injuries that the Brewers have been hit with, some more significant than others, including a couple starting pitchers now that are on the shelf, three starting pitchers really, with Davies, Anderson, and Miley all on the disabled list. We talked about that a little bit. Talked about Jonathan Villar. Brett Phillips came up. Todd went up to Appleton to check out some Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, including Gilbert Lara, who's a pretty interesting prospect case study. So we talked about him a little bit. So lots to discuss. After that, you're going to hear my interview with Jared Kelenic. He's actually probably not someone who's going to be in the Brewers' orbit because he's probably not going to fall to them in the upcoming 2018 draft. He is a Waukesha West High School product, graduated at semester, actually, so he's officially an alumnus of Waukesha West. He is a high school outfielder who is being very highly regarded and could easily be a top 10 pick in the 2018 Major League Baseball draft, which comes up June 4th. He's got some pretty impressive credentials, a couple gold medals with the Team USA U18 team, and he is definitely one of the top guys. Some sites have even floated the possibility that he could be the number one overall pick. There are some thoughts that if the Detroit Tigers, who have the number one pick, decide to go for an option with greater signability, that Jared Kelenic would be the guy. Seems like that's a little bit of a long shot, but top 10, not a long shot. That's a very real possibility for this guy. So caught up with him at Next Level in Waukesha. His dad had a lot to do with building some of the facilities out there, owns the building that belongs to Styx Academy down the road. He built Five Diamonds, the Infinity Fields complex on Les Paul Parkway in Waukesha. So met with him out there, chatted about what's to come here in the June 4th draft. So first, my guest is Todd Rosiak, beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering your Milwaukee Brewers. And the storyline everybody's talking about after Sunday's game is Freddy Peralta. The 21-year-old comes up from AAA, throws a crazy good outing, 5 2/3 innings, 13 strikeouts. Brewers get the win, carried a no-hitter with one out in the sixth inning. It was getting crazy for a while. It was starting to feel like history was happening. Definitely calls to mind some of the better debuts in Milwaukee Brewers history. Todd, I know you weren't with the team, but I know you got to see some of it. Did that just blow your mind? Was there anything you had seen from Freddy Peralta in spring training or just what you know about him that would indicate he could pull off something like that?
Yeah, honestly, nothing. I don't think anybody could have ever expected anything close to what he did today. I went back just because I was curious to see, how much Freddie had pitched in spring training for the big league team, and it was not much. I want to say it was like maybe 4 innings or something like that before he was sent down to minor league camp. And honestly, I mean, I remember seeing him in the clubhouse, and that was really about it. I don't really remember anything about him pitching. Which is not, that's not an indictment or anything. That's just how things go in spring training. The older guys and the guys that are going to factor into the major league team are the ones who are going to get the bulk of the innings. So, obviously he went down to Colorado Springs and got off to a great start. And then he comes in today and what a story. I mean, you couldn't have scripted it any better. I was watching the game kind of off and on, and I remember thinking, at the start, the first inning, he definitely looked nervous to me anyway, just from my semi-trained eye. He did look nervous, but he struck out 2 in that first inning and just kind of picked up momentum from there, it seemed like. And he's got a very interesting delivery, which I think is what helps him get those strikeout numbers up. Is he's not a guy that's going to blow you away. I didn't see every pitch that he threw, but I think the fastest fastball that he threw was 93 today. So it's not like he's dominating hitters, but he's got a real kind of a nice, deliberate, easy windup, and then he hides the ball really well behind his right leg. I don't think the delivery is the same, but the hiding of the ball kind of, to me, was a little bit reminiscent of a guy that used to give the Brewers fits, Josh Colemanter, if people remember him.
Sure, I remember that, for sure.
Same deal. Obviously, the Brewers, I think, have higher hopes for Peralta than the D-backs did for Colemanter. He was an okay pitcher for a while, but it was just very interesting to watch. You know, he just the Rockies did not seem like they could pick up the ball, and before you knew it, he was up into double digit strikeouts, and he gets 13, and you're like, well, you know, what is going on? So today was one of those days where, as a reporter, if you're there, you're rubbing your hands together like, I can't believe this has fallen into my lap. And if you're not working like me today, you're like, damn, I wish I was working, because these are the kinds of things that you really hope for. You know, I was fortunate enough to be in Cincinnati when Hader went nuts. So that was really cool. I would put that along, you know, kind of in that same breath or that same vein as far as personal achievements. And you know, maybe people would expect that a little bit more out of Hader, but it was just such a dominating outing and in history making that it was cool to see in person. So you put Freddie's parents in the stands, you know, they did a good job of talking to them, and just the whole story about how they had never seen him pitch. You couldn't write a better script. So just a very cool day all the way around. And I read that Craig Counsell said that he will be getting another start, which is not a huge surprise. So If I did the math correctly, I will be fortunate enough to be covering his next start in Minnesota on Friday. So, cool beans.
Yeah, you talked about his velocity, and it's the early numbers suggest that he was throwing almost exclusively fastballs, which speaks to the deception you're talking about. I mean, there was a lot of movement, and the Rockies were swinging hard in those first couple innings, so I really thought eventually they would catch up to him and start maybe rocketing the ball around the park, and that just, you know, never happened. He had a pitch count that was high enough that he wasn't going to make it very deep into the game, probably even if he still had a no-hitter intact. But I saw those first couple innings and I thought, I don't know how this is going to play out, because they're getting good swings. The ball is kind of high in the zone, but then, you know, he struck out like Nolan Arenado a couple times. I mean, he was getting the best of some pretty great hitters. So what a day. I wonder how much it helps having pitched in Colorado Springs. I mean, he pitches in Colorado Springs, has thrown in the high altitude. I wonder how much that contributes to being comfortable in a place like Coors Field. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's a good point. It may not have been in his head, like, you know, a guy that maybe was making his debut from Biloxi, you know, and had never pitched at altitude before. You don't really know. And it's not like, you know, Freddie's made a ton of starts at Colorado Springs. He's only been up there, you know, for what, 6 weeks or so far. So, but he at least has the experience. He's seen, I'm sure, some crazy things happen. And obviously he did not let it get into his head. So, you know, as far as debuts go, they do not get much better than what he did today. It was definitely fun to watch.
Calls to mind Steve Woodard in 1997 when he beat the Blue Jays 8 innings, 1 hit over Roger Clemens, a 1-0 game as part of a twi-night doubleheader. That was a game I looked back at and wrote about. I'm going to have something on the JS Online site pretty soon. This, if Freddy Peralta sticks around, that makes that Adam Lynn trade from a few years ago look pretty good. I remember saying and thinking that 3 19-year-olds was pretty underwhelming return for a guy like Adam Lind, who I thought was a decent first baseman, not special, but decent. And thinking, those guys, there's just such a little chance that they're actually going to be something special, let alone have a guy 2 years later at 21 years old making his major league debut. That's the youngest guy in a while. I would be surprised if he's here all year, but now, of course, a lot of things are on the table that maybe weren't before today.
Yeah, Tom, I think accurately described that trade at the time as kind of a lottery ticket for the Brewers. I mean, you know, Lind was coming off a decent year. But he's not going to bring in a huge haul in a trade, but why not roll the dice? You know, so obviously still a lot to be determined, but just to see Peralta do what he did today, that certainly bodes well from the Brewers' standpoint. Then you have Carlos Herrera, who's at Wisconsin, pitching for the Timber Rattlers. From what I understand, he's got a pretty live arm. You know, he's still a ways away yet, but there's a guy that, you know, could still factor in at some point down the road. The third guy they got in that trade, Daniel Misaki, had kind of the tough. He's got kind of a tough road. He was coming off Tommy John when they picked him up, and then he re-injured that elbow and had to have a second Tommy John. So he's back pitching again, but I think obviously, you know, the odds are stacked against him that we'll ever see him at the major league level. But just, I mean, even to get one major league arm out of that deal, you know, kudos to the Brewers and Doug Melvin for pulling that one off. It was a nice trade.
For sure. We'll talk a little bit more later about some of the other observations you've had from that Wisconsin team. I know you got to check them out a little bit. There's obviously a couple prospects of note on that team. But the reason Freddy Peralta's here primarily is the injury issues that have plagued the Brewers. And nothing major, but it seems like a lot of peripheral guys have gone down. We saw Nick Franklin get just an at-bat for the Brewers before he went down. Wade Miley had a decent start and then had to leave very early in his next one. Steven Vogt, of course, was probably done for maybe the rest of his career. Zach Davies has a shoulder issue, which is kind of being treated as minor, but I don't know if there's such a thing as a minor shoulder injury, so that one is a little bit problematic to me. You know, you had Mauricio Dubon and Eric Thames as well. Any of those really stick out as being potential major deal breakers for the Brewers? I certainly would be worried about Davies, even though it sounds like they expect him to be back very soon and make a start here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, the Davies injury is the one that's really worth monitoring. You know, we made the same joke about Davies in the spring as far as, you know, the next minor oblique injury we see is going to be the first minor oblique injury. And it actually wound up being that, because he did only miss a little bit of time and, you know, was able to come back from that and not skip a beat. And the thing with him, it seems he's a little bit different from other players in that he's very in tune with his body. And it seems like if he feels anything that's even the slightest bit out of whack, he's going to let the training staff know, and they're going to proceed with an abundance of caution. And it's probably a good thing. I'm assuming that's what he did again this time. It sounds like it, with the, you know, tweaking the shoulder, you know, not trying to pitch through it, not making the mistake of thinking it's something minor and pitching another inning or two innings, and all of a sudden it's a way worse injury. You know, Wade Miley talked about when he did the oblique, he said he started feeling it and then thought he could pitch through it. And then a pitch or two later, he's like, oh, okay, I'm done. Well, who knows how much more damage was done in that pitch or two after, you know, had he flagged down the training staff right away and said, I don't feel right. So, you know, again, anytime you hear rotator cuff with a pitcher, that's obviously raises a red flag. And I read Tom's stuff today, you know, and he was talking about how Davies' throwing did not go well here. You know, they cut that short, so that's obviously not a good sign. Not to say that that's anything serious, but it obviously is going to keep pushing the timeline back a little bit longer. So that's an injury that's certainly going to bear watching. You know, Chase Anderson, it sounds like it's just going to be a straight 10-day deal. You know, the sickness that he had, he'll get back into the mix and you would think would be good to go from there. And, you know, the other injuries, I mean, to me, it's almost like you forget Thames was on the team. It's kind of weird how guys drop off the radar screen, and the Brewers obviously were in good shape to kind of withstand that loss, because they had both, you know, Braun obviously was playing first base in spring training, and he was able to slide back over there pretty seamlessly. He played there in the first series too, I know. And then Jesus Aguilar, who's played really well as well. So they had a couple of replacements there that they were able to plug in and obviously not really miss much. The offense has been hit or miss, but it'll be interesting to see how much, you know, when Thames gets back, how long it takes him to get back in the mix. But, you know, at the very least, that's a left-handed bat, a left-handed power bat that they certainly will welcome back whenever he is ready to go.
Jesus Aguilar, probably one of the biggest surprises to me this year at all. I mean, he had a came back to earth kind of in the second half of last year. He really struggled, but to have him produce the way he has, he hit a three-run homer on Sunday. That was really huge. And like you said, that's sort of definitely mitigating the loss of Eric Thames to have Aguilar playing the way he is. A couple nights ago, we saw him playing third base, which was crazy, A, because Jesus Aguilar at third base probably surprised us all, but B, because he looked great. He looked really good on defense over there. Part of him being over there, though, is sort of an indication of how Jonathan Villar has really struggled and that they are less and less inclined to use him and use his versatility in the starting lineup. And I mean, we've seen some other guys. Domingo Santana has struggled. Manny Pena as a catcher has struggled, although catchers, I think, sort of get a free pass on offense more than other positions. I mean, if it looks like VR is in the doghouse, do you think that's sort of an accurate representation of what's going on? I mean, maybe are his days maybe numbered with the Brewers?
I don't really foresee them, you know, making any kind of move with him this year, trading him or you know, releasing him, whatever the case may be. But I think he's certainly fallen out of favor. And to me, that really the moment that kind of did it was that base running blunder in Cincinnati, where he, you know, just singled to Jesse Winker in right field, tried going for two, was out by a mile at second. And then Yelich doubles the next at bat, and you know, the Brewers miss out on a run. Obviously, they won that game and swept the series, but they're the kinds of mistakes that just have been seen over and over and over again with VR, and it's like the guy just never learns. And defensively, he's been very spotty out there, you know, dropping throws to second base. I mean, you know, just muffing balls right at him, you know, and he was hitting, I don't know what he's at now, but he was hitting around 300, 275. It was not very impactful. You know, he was bunting for hits, which is good with his speed, but just not a lot behind it, you know?
Right.
So, he certainly is a shadow of the guy that he was 2 years ago in 2016 when he was, you know, one of the team's best players. And more like the guy that played his way out of the lineup last year. So it's second base in spring training. I wouldn't say necessarily it looked like a position of strength, but it looked like a position where the Brewers had options between VR, Sogard, and Hernan Perez. And now VR has played his way out of favor. Obviously, Sogard is back at AAA, and Hernan Perez still really has not gotten it going. So it's one of several positions where the Brewers just are not really still not getting much production. And I'm sure they're, you know, considering other options. I think we'd, you know, we would already have seen Mauricio Dubon up at this point had he not blown out his knee literally the night before, you know, maybe a couple of games before he would have gotten the nod and would have gotten the call. So, you know, obviously a tough break for him, no pun intended, but it's going to be interesting to see what the Brewers do at this position moving forward here, because they definitely need an upgrade.
Yeah, Neil Walker, a guy that they didn't bring back. They didn't try to sign. He ended up signing a pretty cheap free agent deal, but he had really struggled too with the Yankees. I think he had a walk-off yesterday or a couple days ago, but it's not like there was an obvious other option. They, like you said, they had a lot of guys who could play second base. It's just nobody has really clicked just yet. Maybe that's an area they address in the offseason. Third base, though, we don't expect to see Aguilar back over there, because Travis Shaw, when he is in the lineup and is in the lineup full time, is just raking. He has been crushing the ball. I looked at him as a regression candidate. I thought last year was probably better than we could have anticipated, you know, year over year. And now I'm not so sure. I mean, that Tyler Thornburg deal continues to look like this stroke of genius, with Dubon in there as well, plus Josh Pennington, another minor league pitcher. But Travis Shaw has been awesome. I mean, does it surprise you the way it does surprise me that he's sustained his hot hitting and been one of their best offensive weapons going, you know, all the way through 2018 so far?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if surprised is the right word. I just, from what I saw of him last year, Travis Shaw, over the course of the season, he just strikes me as one of those steady Eddie guys that you can just plug in and know you're going to get, you know, a guy that's going to hit 260-ish, 270-ish, hit you 25 home runs and drive in 80, 85, 90 runs. I don't know. That was just me. But I just like his approach. I like his calm demeanor. He doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. He's kind of got the perfect baseball mentality, a day-to-day guy. you know, he certainly isn't going to wow you in the field, but he makes all the requisite plays at third base. And you know, to me, it's been talked about a million times already, but just the year that he had last year and the focus he was able to maintain with all the stuff with his daughter was incredible. Mm-hmm. Just a testament to how strong mentally he is. So, you know, you take what he went through, you know, being able to put up those numbers with his daughter struggling in the hospital like that for much of the season, you know, it makes you think that an 0 for 20 and, you know, a 2 for 30 is not going to phase him in the least, because he's been through the worst of the worst and come through the other side. So to me, I feel like he's a guy that's just going to continue to produce, continue to put up numbers, and by the end of the season, you're going to look at the stat line again and be like, wow, another heck of a year for him. So, you know, considering the fact that Tyler Thornburg is still hurt, from what I understand, and not pitching, it certainly was a highway robbery sort of trade for the Brewers.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Travis Shaw's newborn daughter needed quite a bit of medical attention, stayed at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin for a long time after she was born, but seems like everything is going well now. She's obviously at home, and now he can rest easy a little bit. And like you said, he's been crushing the ball regardless of circumstances. So before I move into some quick hitters, wanted to talk about some work that you've done lately. You went to visit the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, checked in with a few prospects there. The one that I'm most interested in is Gilbert Lara, who was a pretty highly touted international signing a few years ago for the Brewers. And then, like a lot of really young kids who come over to the United States and start their pro careers, he struggled to the point where he fell out of favor as an actual prospect. But now he's sort of bubbling back up a little bit, showing some encouraging signs. We've seen a lot from, there's other guys on the team that we've seen a lot from as well. So I'll just let you have the floor. Give me some impressions, three or four impressions you have from visiting with the Timber Rattlers.
I went up there with the express purpose of talking to Gilbert and also talking to Demi Oromoloi, and just kind of catching up with them and what, you know, where they are in their minor league careers, where they, you know, they're both off to pretty good starts so far this season, which is good for both of them, considering the struggles they both had last year. And, you know, you kind of set the stage for Gilbert Lara. You know, it's hard to believe, you know, this guy's been in the organization almost 4 years already now. You know, he got a $3.2 million signing bonus as a 16-year-old, and he's 20 now. And he's still skewing young. He's still on the young side for the Midwest League. So, you know, the people who were writing him off and saying that he was washed up and everything, that's what you have to remember. I mean, this kid, he's still a kid. He's still on the young side of the league that he's playing in. So, you know, he's recovered from a pretty horrific leg injury that he suffered last year in his first and only game at Helena. Broke his leg and his ankle, dislocated his ankle on a slide, had to have surgery. Obviously a terrible setback for him, but he's back, playing really well. They're playing him both at shortstop and at third base. And in speaking to Gilbert, pretty reflective, pretty mature guy. You know, I wasn't really quite sure how he would describe his time with the Brewers, but he was pretty honest with me and, you know, spoke about how, you know, a couple years ago when things weren't going well, he didn't really handle it well mentally and was an angry guy and just didn't do things the right way, I guess is the easiest way to put it. But, you know, he's kind of learned from that and come through a tough injury on the other side. And he's really focused on just trying to do things the right way now and become a good player and get himself kind of back on the radar screen as far as being a prospect. Matt Erickson, the Timber Rattlers manager, speaks very highly of him. I asked for physical comps for both Demi and Gilbert. And it's funny because he had two pretty good ones a couple years ago. For Demi, a good physical comp would be Monte Harrison, but with much greater speed and a much better base runner, if you can believe that. And for Gilbert Lara, his comp physically would be Jake Gatewood, although he said Lara is much better defensively and has a much better throwing arm. So Matt Erickson spoke highly of both of these guys. Said Lara's still got some work to do as far as lateral movement, quickness, that sort of thing. But defensively, definitely has a future as either a shortstop or a third baseman, which is interesting because he is 6'4 and about 195. So he's a pretty imposing physically, or at least, he skews on the tall end, let's say that, defensively at those positions. But said he has all the forward to back and the throwing arm that is required to make all the throws on that side of the infield. And his approach at the plate is much improved. His balance is much better. His head's much more still. So he really looks like a different player than he did last year. So it's I'll have that story in Wednesday's paper. It'll be online later Tuesday. Should be a good one because I think, obviously he was one of the Brewers' most talked about prospects a couple years ago and just really, really kind of fell off. And as far as Demi Ormoloy, just a physical freak, very, very much like Lara. In fact, that he's on the young end of the Midwest League as far as age goes. Again, he's another one that's really working on his approach at the plate, working on his baseball IQ. Physically, you're not going to find many guys better than him as far as the tools go. Has a cannon of an arm, is kind of a prototype right fielder. 6'4", 225, and he looks like he's carved out of stone. So he's got all that down. But now the question is, can he pick up the mental side? Learn the routines, learn the approaches, that sort of thing. Matt Erickson talked about Monte Harrison. He played parts of three seasons with the T-Rats, and by that third season, he had finally gotten it. It had finally clicked. He didn't make any errors in the outfield in the roughly half a season he was there. His approach was much improved at the plate. He was really doing everything. He was affecting the game on all facets, and then got bumped up to Carolina, continued the success there, and obviously became a pretty valuable trade chip for the Brewers. So, nice kid, both very nice kids, had good interviews with them. So the Demi story is something that I'll be writing in the future as well, but the Gilbert Lara will be first up, like I said, online Tuesday and in the paper on Wednesday.
Most Brewer fans know Harrison was part of the trade in the offseason that netted Christian Yelich, so he's in the Marlins organization. Now, I'm really surprised you say Ormoloy is faster than him, just because I know that guy's a huge dude, so that's very encouraging that he comps to Monty Harrison, who I know was regarded as one of the better athletes in the system.
Yeah, he's and it's amazing, too, because when you look at Demi, like physically, he looks like he could be a prototypical rush end playing football. Like
yeah.
He's that jacked and that well put together. But Matt Erickson swears he's like he runs like the wind, and he's a very smart base runner, very good base runner. So he said he's also got amazing 5 o'clock power. So he puts on some pretty good batting practice shows as well. So it'll be interesting to see by the end of the season, assuming he stays healthy, what kind of numbers he puts up, because he's already off to a pretty good start and better in several categories than he was last year. So, two guys that are obviously have a few more years to go, some more seasoning, but are intriguing prospects and certainly bear watching here in the next couple years.
Some quick hitters before we get out of here. Wanted to ask quickly about Brett Phillips. He's been up and down a lot this year with AAA and the big league team. He's struggled at the plate. He's looked a little lost at times. He doesn't seem to be clicking just yet. Are you worried about his long-term prospects, waning a little bit? Because I don't think anybody thought he would necessarily be here all year, but I watch him and I'm worried that he's maybe, I don't know if there's a confidence thing or anything, but he just looks like he's really struggling at the plate.
Yeah. I don't know that worry is the right word. Obviously to me, he looked a little bit more tentative than he has in call-ups past. To me, kind of the ideal Brett Phillips was the guy that played toward the end of the last season for the Brewers, who can affect games defensively. Can hit the occasional home run for you. He has strikeout in his game. There's no question about it. But in this latest call up before he got sent down, there were a lot of called third strikes, just like not taking the bat off the shoulder, and that didn't really seem like the same player that he was the previous times he had been called up. So who knows what was going on there. The thing about him is, I think the Brewers are just so high on him. His attitude, you know, he's a gamer, so upbeat, a great clubhouse guy, always trying to do the right thing, trying to be a good teammate. And the thing that separates him, I think, that helps him and keeps him in the plans moving forward is the fact that he is a left-handed hitter with some pop and just the incredible defensive skills that he has, especially the throwing arm. That separates him from some of the other guys that play the same position, like a Keon Broxton, let's say. So I think he needs to go back down like they sent him down and just get regular playing time, get regular at bats. And the next time he's needed, you bring him up again and see what he can do. But I certainly think it's too early to be worried about him or say that, call him a failure or, a prospect that just didn't make the cut.
Unquestionably one of the most entertaining players in that organization. So I know when he clicks, he's going to be one of the most popular guys out there. He is so much fun. So
we're not supposed to root for players, but as reporters, selfishly, we do root for guys like that to stick around, the Brent Suters, guys like that, because they're just marvelous to work with. They're quotable. They have good personalities. They're funny. Guys like that really make the job fun, and you're always rooting for good stories, and those two guys especially are ones that are fun to cover.
Speaking of Brent Suter, since we last had a podcast, he hit a ball 433 feet off the reigning American League Cy Young winner. Have you? I don't recall many other at bats that I've seen from him. Is he a good hitter? Like, I don't remember. Has he ever shown anything that would suggest the guy could, rip a home run that far and then double in his next game on top of it?
Yeah, I don't really recall much about his hitting prior to that home run, but I will say that before this even all happened, I considered him to be a sneaky good athlete. And Craig Counsell said it after that game. He's a strong guy. He is. I mean, he has kind of that gawky running gait, and he plays up the Raptor thing and everything. But if you look at the guy just physically, he's 6'5". He's about 215, 220. He's put together. He's got big hands. He's built. And those skills translate over. Obviously he doesn't have a 95 mile an hour fastball, but there's a reason the guy's in the major leagues. He's a pretty good athlete. So, obviously, everything kind of came together at that one moment in time, and was able to crush a home run off of one of the best pitchers in baseball. So that's something that he'll always have. But just the hitting of the pitchers in general this season for the Brewers, not necessarily the starters, but the bullpen has been incredible, and just kind of one of those funny little things that's been fun to watch and fun to keep track of, because there's been guys that have been doing things that there's no way you ever could have predicted that they're doing. And it just adds a little bit something to each game when they do something like that.
My favorite stat for the year was after that home run, the Brewers relievers were 4-for-4 with 3 extra base hits, 2 doubles, a home run, 3 RBIs, 3 runs scored. That was a pretty wild start. They're now 4-for-6, although one of those outs was also an error. Brett Suter reaching on an error later in that game. So it's been kind of fun to watch that. Last thought, Brandon Woodruff, where do you see him fitting in with this team right now? He's been up and down a little bit. He has struggled at times, and sometimes he looks great. They have him as a starter at times. He's worked out of the bullpen, of course. What do you think of him the rest of this year? And then long term, I presume you still see him as a starter for this team.
Yeah, I think he's probably going this year will be the version of Brent Suter, what he was last year. Sure. Kind of that guy that can go up and down, that guy that's going to be the swing man. He's going to start some games. He's going to be in the bullpen. And it's not, obviously it can be a frustrating role for guys, but it's also, if you're good at it, it makes you the first guy to get that phone call in the minor leagues. And you're always happy to get that call up again, no matter how many times it is. So to me, that's kind of what Woodruff looks like at this point. Obviously, things can change, and if there are some more injuries, and or if all of a sudden he gets a start or two and he pitches really well and kind of cements his place in the rotation, that can change things. But to me, it may be one of those years for him where he's just going to be on the shuttle, and then going into next year, depending on what the staff looks like, maybe he gets a shot. A more solid shot to stick in the rotation. But You know, like I said, there is value in being able to do both things and being able to do both things well. And that's unfortunately, maybe fortunately or unfortunately for him, that looks like the role he's going to play. And it's on him to do it well, you know, and to take it in the right way and to perform when he's called upon. Otherwise, obviously, there are other guys that they could look at. But I certainly think they're still high on him. Has a good arm, obviously, has proven to be a gamer, has turned in some good starts in the past. So, you know, it's a guy I think that certainly has more in the gas tank for sure.
Todd Rosiak, you can find his material at jsonline.com. He'll be in Minnesota when the road trip wraps up. You should also keep an eye out for his material early this week about his adventures at in Appleton with the Wisconsin Tiber-Rattlers and Gilbert Lara in particular. I know that's a player I'm interested in reading more about, and I know a lot of other people are as well. Todd, thank you for joining us.
You got it, JR. Always a pleasure.
Next up is my interview with Jared Kelenic. Again, he's a Waukesha West High School product. He did not play for the high school baseball team, but has been on the travel circuit quite a bit. Very accomplished left-handed batting outfielder. He's got a couple gold medals playing with Team USA, with the U18 team. He's been part of just about every showcase you can think of, and he is considered a top 10 to 15 pick, if not even a little higher, for the upcoming June Major League Baseball draft. He is on track to being the highest drafted Wisconsin high school product in draft history. He could, Kevin Brandt of Nakusa, 1979, went 11th overall to the Twins. There are a couple players who are from Wisconsin high schools that went higher after some college experience. So, in fact, one went number two. So he would have to go number one overall to be officially the highest drafted Wisconsin high school product in that sense. But that is not out of the realm of possibility. Some websites have him as a option for the Detroit Tigers with the number one overall pick. Seems like a long shot, like I said earlier in the podcast, but not out of the realm of possibility. So I decided to go visit with him, met him at Next Level in Waukesha, and chatted about what is to come for him here in this draft that shows up on June 4th. Here's a listen with Jared Kelenic. My guest is Jared Kelenic. He was a senior at Waukesha West High School. He has now graduated. He'll be taken presumably in the first round of the upcoming Major League Baseball draft. Will probably be one of the highest Wisconsin kids ever selected, maybe the highest Wisconsin kid ever selected. And I want to start with the high school thing. I was surprised to learn, actually, that you had graduated at semester. So how early did you know that was something you might try to do, and what was that process like trying to, I don't know, rush things along so you could be out here?
Yeah, you know, it really took place my sophomore year. I had heard stories about kids in my sister's class that had done it, and I knew that for me that it was going to be something that would be really nice, especially when how much I enjoy working on baseball. It would give me just more time to really focus in and hone on my skills, and I met with my counselor, and the only thing I really needed to do was take two more English classes in my senior semester, and I was done.
So now that you have graduated, we're filming this at Next Level out in Waukesha. Is it NX or Next Level?
Next Level.
It is Next Level. Okay. So on the campus right next to Five Diamonds, we haven't had great weather, no secret. So I don't know how much that's inhibited your ability to get out there and play baseball. You're obviously playing baseball all over the country, but what has the spring been like for you? I mean, how difficult has it been trying to actually, you know, get on the baseball field?
Yeah, you know, as a hitter, it's been really hard because we'll be outside for one day and then we won't get back outside for 2 weeks. So it's hard to get into a rhythm, but you know, with these great facilities that we have here in Waukesha, like Next Level, like Sticks, or even down in Racine, like Hitters, we have the opportunity to work 365 days a year no matter the weather out there. It is still different hitting inside, but, you know, it's better than not being able to do anything.
One of the stigmas, and you've heard this over and over again, about Wisconsin kids or Midwestern kids is that they don't have that 365, you know, day a year schedule where they can get outside. I do feel like that's changed, though, and I think you know Gavin Lux, Kenosha Indian Trail. I think you're friends with him, if I recall. He went a couple years ago, number 20 overall, to the Dodgers. Jaron Kendall, you've seen a lot of Wisconsin kids that have been drafted lately. What do you think, do you attribute that to places like this where you are able to get indoors in some of these high, you know, high-level facilities, or is there something else that you would point to?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with the great facilities that we have, like I said earlier, we have the opportunity to work just as much as somebody down south in Florida, Texas, you know, California. But at the same time, I think it, you know, guys like Gavin, guys like Jaron, guys like Ben, Rortvedt, they give the younger kids hope and know that just because they live here, they can do it. Yeah. And I think that's huge.
Yeah, I think when Lux was taken, it had been since 1979 that a Wisconsin kid got taken in the first round, so that's obviously a trend that's changing a little bit. Give me a sense of what the travel circuit is like a typical week in the summer for you, because I mean, obviously you're traveling a lot. I mean, are you traveling every week? What's a schedule like for the Kellenic family when the summer rolls around?
Yeah, you know, last year was kind of different because there's a lot of events I had to go to, like the Under Armour game, the Perfect Game, All-American game, area code, stuff like that. So that was different. But the year before that is when I was really with my travel team, and we were on the travel circuit, and it was every week. I would leave on Wednesdays, and I'd be gone. Sometimes I'd be with my family, but more often than not, I was with RJ and our squad inside our van. But yeah, I'd leave on Wednesday. I won't come back home till Sunday night. So, and then I'd be home for 2 days, and then I was gone the next Wednesday. So it was something every weekend.
How did you balance when the spring and fall seasons were out? Were you able to balance school pretty easily, or was that a challenge?
You know, at times it was a challenge, but I had great help from, you know, the administrators over at West. They helped me out dramatically, especially missing a month of school with Team USA my first year. I was the first to say that any kid that misses a month, like, you're digging yourself a pretty big hole, regardless if it's baseball or anything else. So they were very helpful throughout the whole process. They understood, and that was huge.
There are a lot of big athletes that have come through next level. J.J. Watt's obviously the one everyone knows. Pretty much every high-level football player from the state of Wisconsin, and maybe a high-level athlete from the Milwaukee area anyway, has passed through here. Have you had a chance to meet J.J., and what are some of the – has he given you advice? I mean, is there anything that you guys have talked about?
Yeah, you know, I haven't really had, like, a full conversation with J.J. before. You know, I've worked out alongside him before, and just to see, you know, somebody that's the best defensive player in the league – worked that hard, and he's made it. And it motivates kids like me that want to get to that spot, even though it's a different sport, that even though he's there, he still works that hard, and how hard you need to work to get there.
Yeah. You mentioned Gavin Lux before, a lot of guys from hitters who are in the minors now. I mean, or at least have connections. I think Corey Ray was a guy who had spent some time in Wisconsin. Do you follow any of those guys? Do you keep in touch with any of them as they work their way up the minors?
Yeah, absolutely. I text Gavin every now and then, Ben, Rort Betu, and I keep in contact with a lot of guys I play with on Team USA too that are in the wall.
Sure,
so
yeah.
I got a lot of great resources, a lot of great people, and I'm excited for it.
So speaking of the Team USA stuff, you've had a couple gold medal experiences, played on the U18 team, you were in Mexico, Pan American Games, got to play Target Field, I believe, this past summer. What have those experiences, I mean, and where do those rank? It's kind of hard to really contextualize a gold medal performance, how that ranks, but where does that rank in what you've experienced so far?
You know, all of it's been pretty surreal, to be honest. You know, I got to play with a lot of unbelievable talented kids, and in unbelievable stadiums, too, like Target Field. But, you know, at the same time, I think the biggest thing, no matter where we were playing, whether it was in Canada at an average field or in Minnesota at their major league stadium, you just try to take it, you know, one game at a time, one pitch at a time, because the bases are the same, the fence is the same, all the rules are the same. So,
yeah. If I read a scouting report about you, it seems like a lot of people isolate on your power as sort of your strength, but obviously you get good grades across the board. Really, what would you sort of say if you're giving a scouting report of yourself? Where are your strengths? Where do you really feel the most confident in your game?
You know, I would say that personally that I'm like, I got all five tools. I can run, I can throw, I can feel my position, I can hit for average, I can hit for power. You know, I think I've spent so much time, you know, trying to fine-tune my skills in this game. And, you know, they're only going to get better with time. And right now I think they're better than they've ever been.
Part of the process of becoming a draft pick is getting an advisor, and you know, you're already seeing things about your signability or any player's signability. How have you navigated that? That can be a tricky road. You know, you're committed to the, you know, University of Louisville, so you're also focusing on, you know, getting ready for a college career too. So like, what, how have you sort of balanced all of that stuff?
You know, the agent advisor process was, you know, I would say it was pretty easy. I knew I was gonna need somebody that was gonna be, you know, there for me when I needed them. Yeah. Be like kind of like a friendship type thing. I had a lot of agents approach me. Me and my family kind of just finalized it where we narrowed it down to, you know, two firms, had them come into our house, and we ended up picking one. So I think the whole agent process was pretty easy, and haven't looked back since.
Cool. Do you talk just as far as staying in touch with the University of Louisville, how often have you kept them abreast of, you know, what you're doing and what's going on with, you know, with this whole process?
Yeah, you know, they text me every now and then. You know, at the same time with them being in their season too, it's kind of tough for the coaches to keep in touch. But they've been great.
Yeah. If you look at mock drafts, they're everywhere, man. I've seen you 2, 5, 8, 15. It's got to be a little overwhelming to see your name on these lists. But do you follow it at all? Is there any? Do you try to like get any sort of information from these mock drafts of what teams, you know, what people are thinking about how this might shake out?
Yeah, you know, that's one reason why I'm off Twitter right now.
I saw that. Yeah. Shut it down in the new year. That was smart.
Just to stay away from it because, you know, mock drafts, you can only take them for what they're worth. And, you know, they're going to have to change it up every now and then so that it's not the same thing to give people something to look at. But, you know, I try not to pay much attention to it because to this day, nobody knows who's going 1. Nobody knows who's going 2. Nobody knows who's going 3. Nobody's going to know until the day.
Right.
So I try not to, you know, look at it too much. It's really cool to see my name up there. That's really surreal, especially when you're a high school kid and now you're among or ahead of some college kids. But, you know, I just try to just go out and play my game and not worry about that stuff.
How often do you hear from big league teams? Do you have guys talking to you every day, every other day?
You know, it's kind of, it was a lot. I've had all 30 teams inside my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And kind of just the communication's been kind of limited now as we get closer.
What's been the best part of this whole thing? Is it winning the gold medals? Is it just traveling and meeting? I mean, how? What would you say? And maybe what's been the frustrating part, the best and the worst part of this whole process?
The best part is creating friendships that are going to last forever. Mm-hmm. Because we're all going to be a former player longer than we're going to be a current player. It's that simple, no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
So the game's fun. I love it to death. But it's the friendships that you make that are the best part about it. And, you know, I don't think there's really anything that I look at as being the worst part. I mean, losing, but that's everyone, I think.
Yeah. What would it mean to you to be the top 10? I know that's out of your control, but to be, if you're top 10, that makes you the highest Wisconsin kid, high school kid that's ever been drafted. I mean, is that something that you would look for, or is it just about, hey, anywhere in the first round is good?
You know, I try not to look into it too much. You know, at the same time, wherever I end up getting taken, I think the biggest impact for me is going to have on the kids around here. Because of how much, you know, they don't have that hope as if, you know, kids down in the South do with the weather. And I hope that, like with me, they look at my story and realize that if you really want it, you can work for it and you can achieve whatever you want. So I think that's really what's going to mean the most to me.
Do you find yourself keeping tabs on the other guys that are near the top of the list in this draft, like guys in college, anywhere around the country?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you know some of those guys, or is it just you just know them by reputation, by stats, and things like
that? College kids, I just know by their reputation, that. But high school kids, played with them.
Yeah.
Know what they're like.
So I mentioned at the outset we're near Five Diamonds. Your dad, Tom is his name? Yeah, I thought I screwed that one up. He is a co-owner, helped build this whole thing. What does this facility mean to you? I mean, we talked about Next Level, but just the Five Diamonds in general has been such a big addition to the Waukesha community. So what does it mean to you to be out here?
Yeah, you know, I think the whole situation really speaks about my dad's character. My dad's somebody that's always wanted to give not only his kids, but kids around this community the best opportunity possible and to achieve what they want to achieve. And, you know, that's him building this facility that we're in right now, like Next Level, like Styx Academy, and the baseball field, Five Diamonds right out here. I think that right there just speaks alone for how, you know, what type of guy he is. But it's like a personal note, it's helped me dramatically because I've gotten to come in here and work out Yeah. I've been able to go to states and hit. I've been to Five Diamonds to hit. Like, I have all the resources to make sure that my game's fine-tuned.
What's draft day is less than a month away at this point, so what's that going to – do you have plans? Are you flying to where the first round is being held?
You know, I got invited to the draft. I'm not going to attend because, okay. You know, I want to spend the day with the people that got me here.
Sure.
And I think, you know, throughout this process, there's been times where they may feel that, you know, I haven't been able to express it as much as I should about how much I thank you for it. But, you know, I owe it to them to be back here and to, you know, really spend the day with them.
Joe Thomas, his jersey's on the wall. He famously, on draft day, was out fishing. He was doing what it was comfortable for him, too. So that's awesome. When did this, because I'm kind of wrapping it up here, when did this sort of dawn on you that you were going to be a first-round talent? Was that as recently as a year ago, 2 years ago? Was it freshman year of high school? I mean, when did it become a possibility that you were at that level, that you were going to be in this conversation?
You know, people ask me that all the time, and I simply just say that ever since I was really young, I've had the highest expectations possible.
Sure.
So, like, when people tell me, like, hey, like, you got a chance to go number one, you're going to be a first-round pick, top 10, all that stuff, you know, I expect that out of myself. That's just who I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it really never, like, really hit the public eye until, like, the last 2 years.
Right. And in a way, almost a little bit under the radar because you don't, you know, obviously didn't play for the high school team. And it seems, at least in my world, there's a lot of high school coverage, but not a lot of people locally knew your name. And they certainly know it now, but they didn't for those first couple of years. So that's kind of interesting, too. Well, Jared, I appreciate the time. Good luck. Good luck on draft day. And thanks very much for the time.
Thank you.
That's all for now. We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. Tune in before the start of the next homestand. Coming up in a week, we'll have more. Get you updated on what's going on as the Brewers get closer to the end of the second month of the season. Time flies. Brewers playing pretty good baseball right now. So thanks for listening. We will catch you again very soon.